So we can see that the holiday season is upon us. As we just look up here and see the banners, the tree, the menorah. So I thought I would ask Tammy to just sing a brief holiday song specialized for us as we begin my sermon.
God's rest, ye Unitarians, let nothing you dismay. Remember, there's no evidence there was a Christmas day. When Christ was born is just not known, no matter what they say. Oh, tidings of reason and fact, reason and fact. Oh, tidings of reason and fact. There was no star of Bethlehem, there was no angel song. There could not have been wise men, for the trip would take too long. The stories in the Bible are historically wrong. Oh, tidings of reason and fact, reason and fact. Oh, tidings of reason and fact.
Thank you, Tammy. Reason and fact takes away some of the magic of the season. No sense of wondrous mystery or divine love made real. Reason and fact. And of course, reason is integral to our Unitarian Universalist tradition. But it's not all that we are. We sing about the spirit of life and invite that spirit to come unto me. So we can move beyond reason and fact. In fact, the Reverend Galen Gingrich says, faith is a commitment to live as if certain things are true and thereby help to make them so. Faith is a leap of the moral imagination that connects the world as it is to the world as it might become. In October, members of various Unitarian Universalist congregations here in our Pacific Northwest District gathered to consider ways beyond relying on reason and fact, analysis and debate to make decisions, and how to practice discernment. The Reverend Bruce Davis led our workshop, and he described this idea of discernment in various ways. He talked about finding ways to turn on our intuition, to sense the authentic openings in our lives, those openings that are calling to us. Discernment is unique among the many ways we make our decisions and determine our life directions. It goes beyond the rational and logical tools that we're so familiar with. Now, the workshop was not about abandoning our reason, but about adding to it. Of course, there's value to analytical thinking, weighing pros and cons against each other with all the intellect we can muster, using inductive reasoning and empirical methods to strengthen our choices. But sometimes these analytical tools don't go far enough. Discernment is an intuitive way of making decisions. It requires us to tap into knowing beyond our intellect, access the wisdom held in our bodies, our hearts, our spirit. And of course, there are tools and practices to help us do that. I imagine some of you use a simple discernment practice without realizing that you're engaging in spiritual practice to tap into deep wisdom. Do any of you flip a coin? So, not sure what to do, you might flip a coin. Not that you're going to let this coin dictate what you do, but it can help you discover more deeply what you want to do. Flip the coin. Heads I go, tails I stay. It's tails. I stay. Now I wait a moment. How do I feel about staying? What's my body telling me? What sensations do I notice? Oh, in my belly there's this sinking feeling, a little churning. My shoulders are drooping. I don't want to stay. I really want to go. And now I know that, so I can just turn the coin over and go. By using this simple ploy, I can identify a deeper movement in myself. I can get out of my head and into my heart, my emotions. I let my body get into the decision. There's enormous wisdom in our felt senses, and it's available to us always if we just attend to it. But to sometimes get to that felt sense, to that deeper wisdom, we have to put our incessant thinking on hold. Now, sages have been encouraging us to do this for thousands of years. A central purpose to Buddhist meditation practice is to become mindful of our discursive thoughts, our habitual patterns, and ultimately to see what happens when that monkey mind settles down. We heard the wisdom of the Taoist tradition from Lao Tzu in our first reading. He asked, "Do you have the patience to wait till your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving until the right action arises by itself?" Hebrew and Christian scripture both lift up the wisdom of attending to those deeper places than we typically notice in our daily lives. They refer to it as the quiet whisper of God, or the still, small voice within. But how do we find and nurture this wise voice? I find that I often need to express myself to discover what wisdom lies within me. Now, sometimes this expression might be private, writing in a journal, maybe even writing a dialogue, posing questions to myself and then providing my own answers. But often I cannot do this alone. I need a trusted listener. With deep listening and honest questions, I begin to see my life and my choices in new ways. As I was making my final decision to leave the corporate world and begin my consulting and training practice, I spoke to a lot of people. Some of them, one of them is a friend of mine who's visiting, who's giggling in the front row. He remembers this well. Some people gave me passionate advice. "Of course you have to leave, Leslie." Others vociferously said, "Are you crazy? You cannot leave that great job." And the most helpful people were people who asked me questions. And Edward was one of those. Questions to which they didn't already have an answer. These were not questions cleverly designed to help me reach their predetermined conclusion, but curious questions that had me seek new answers inside myself. And they listened to my answers, not to agree or disagree with me, but to reflect back to me where they heard my passion, where they noticed a flatness, or to ask me to say something more about something intriguing or surprising. And at the end, I submitted my resignation and began to follow my truer path to move toward the future that was calling me. Now, this is not only a process that we use as individuals trying to discern our own life path, but it's available for groups, for families, for organizations, for congregations who need this intuitive power of discernment, facing important decisions or trying to identify common purpose and direction. Our fifth principle affirms the right of conscience of each person within a community. The goal of group discernment is to facilitate that expression of each individual conscience in the direction of the common good. Now, of course, we often rely on voting and parliamentary process, which can be helpful as tools to kind of assess where's the conscience, where are we being led here, what's emerging. But if it's used prematurely, it can foster a tyranny of the majority. Sometimes we need to slow down to discover what's really so. Conversation, where possible directions are shared in dialogue, this is the essence of group discernment. Something magical happens among us when we share and listen authentically without premature judgment. Discernment brings us into an intuitive way of working together. It doesn't take away from the rational approaches we're familiar with, but adds to them. It's about respecting each other, valuing all the individual gifts among us, learning from each other, listening together for truth and common purpose as they shape themselves in our midst. I like to think about what happens at the center of the circle. There are four organizational learning pioneers: Peter Senge, Otto Scharmer, Joseph Jaworski, and Betty Sue Flowers, who have really been engaging in this question of group discernment, especially at this time in our world where we need wise answers to very difficult questions. So they engaged in deep conversation amongst the four of them and interviewed all kinds of scientists, social leaders, entrepreneurs, leaders in business, government, spiritual realms, and wrote a book called Presence: Human Purpose and the Field of the Future. So this is something that it's hard to put into words, and you can kind of see that in this book, that they've written a lot of story. They've actually kind of transcribed some of their conversations, because in those conversations, this wisdom emerged. And they've created kind of a model that's shaped like a U. So with the idea being that we start up here in our normal lives, and then we need to go deeper, and then, of course, we need to come back up and engage in our regular lives again. So they talk about here, when we're in our regular lives, starting to listen, to sense what we know, to see what's there, both the way that we normally see, but also trying to see something bigger, seeing a whole, being open to something different, surprising, that we haven't already thought. They talk about this as a process of letting go of what we already know, so something new might emerge. And that in that space, at the bottom of the U, that's where they call this idea of presence, that we let something come, so we've let go, so that now we can let come, that something new can emerge that might transform us, that might transform the future, that we want to sense what wants to happen, what can only happen through us, and that that starts to crystallize as we envision what is emerging and what could be, so that we can then bring it into reality in some way. So I'll give you a personal example of kind of how this happened to me, and then a couple of examples of how it's happened in groups. It's important, this sensing as we go down, to remain open to something unexpected. We heard from the Taoist master, the master doesn't seek fulfillment. Not seeking, not expecting, she is present and can welcome all things. So my process of becoming a minister happened, or deciding to become a minister happened, either in a moment or in a decade, depending upon how you count. I had the idea at the first Unitarian Universalist service I ever attended, but it seemed so completely crazy, I couldn't do much about it. But I did keep dancing with it for a few years and decided not to do it. I moved to Boston to be with Adam, and was seeking a class to take, surfing the web, and I made my way to the Andover Newton Theological School website. I got lost while there, looking at the classes, the workshops, the book readings, everything that was available, and I lost track of time. And as I kind of reemerged, I remembered something that someone had recently told Adam: to pay attention to his passions, to where his attention naturally went with no effort, as he was doing some career discernment. I was not doing career discernment. I had left my corporate job. I knew what I was doing with my training and consulting practice. But I kind of remembered that advice and thought, I might want to pay attention to what just happened here as I was engaging in this website. And I went to visit Andover Newton just to see about taking one class, just for fun. And I just felt this huge relief, like I had come home. And when I spoke about actually going to seminary to become a minister, tears would always spring to my eyes. So I knew that I was in the presence of something important, and I had to attend to it. And then it just unfolded as I came back out of the bottom of that U into making it real. And you know how the story ends. Here I am. But if I hadn't been open to that idea that I was not I was not wondering about what to do next. I already knew what to do. It might never have happened, so we have to be open to the unexpected. A story that Joseph and Otto, two of the authors, talk about, they're big-time consultants, but they also are people of huge heart and spirit. So they were brought in as two companies were merging two divisions to help them figure out how are we going to do this and how are we going to combine leaders and everything. So they were going to design a process to develop leaders. They'd been working for 4 months with a group of people selected. It was the last day of the process before they were going to present to the CEO, which if some of you have been in the corporate world, this is an anxiety-provoking event, to know that you're going to present to the CEO. And they don't have anything. They have been working for 4 months. They've got flip charts all over a room, but they don't have a plan. They don't have a program. They know that they really need to find their creativity. And, of course, in this kind of anxious space, not supportive of creativity. So everyone's getting more and more anxious, more and more tense, less and less creative. And then this normally quiet, reserved person stands up and faces the group. His name is Dave, and he says, in a voice that lets people know this is hard for him, he says, I'm struggling here. I think I understand the pieces, but I just can't complete the whole picture. And he turns to one of the consultants and says, can you help me? Can you explain this to me? If we can just see the whole picture, we'll have the breakthrough we need. And the consultant didn't respond, in part because he didn't have an easy answer, and in part because he could feel what was happening in the room as this person had courageously spoken what no one else really dared to say. And then Joseph, the other consultant, says, you know, I think what's been missing is our willingness to speak and listen from the heart, like Dave had just done. And someone else said, yeah, I think we could create any change we wanted if we had the kind of courage that Dave just demonstrated. And then everyone in the room started to speak from that deeper source, that deeper place of wisdom, and the design for the entire program became clear, seemingly without effort. What had seemed completely impossible 20 minutes before unfolded in an hour and was the basis for something called the Leadership Lab that led these two divisions that had been not doing very well to be performing wonderfully. They say they went from worst to first. So they attended to that moment, that possibility that emerged when Dave had the courage to speak up. Another context in which this has happened is much more complicated than the merger of two divisions. It's in Guatemala, which Guatemala was torn with 36 years of civil war that ended in 1996. And you can imagine that as people have experienced all kinds of horrors and inflicted all kinds of horrors on each other, that, you know, how to come together as a country as they found, you know, supposed peace, but how to honor what was actually in the treaty. A group brought together 45 leaders from all kinds of different sectors, and they came together to try to envision different scenarios of what could happen, to try to encourage each other and the country to move towards a positive scenario rather than potentially a disastrous scenario. And part of what they did together was share stories of what it had been like for them. And so they're in a room, people are being very courageous, telling stories of seeking a disappeared sister, sitting next to the general who denied anything when she went to try to confront him. So you can just sense that this was a difficult space to be in. And yet what has emerged from this incredible network of trusting relationships, which almost everyone in this group attributes to one particular moment in time where they were really at the bottom of that U. So someone was speaking about having gone to a rural Mayan village to observe an exhumation of the graves, these mass graves. And he noticed these really small bones that just didn't make sense to him. And so he asked the forensic person, well, you know, were people's bones broken? Is that why these bones are so small? And the man said, no, those are the bones of the unborn children of murdered pregnant women. And in that moment, the whole room went silent. And that silence lasted, people say, for about 5 minutes, which is a long time of silence. And that silence had a huge impact on the group. Some people say that there was a spirit in the room in that moment. They say that they glimpsed in that story the essential whole of the Guatemalan reality, the mystery to which they needed to be connected in order to do what they had to do. So even though the one person told the story, the meaning emerged from the silence that was held by the entire circle. Their precise purpose emerged in that moment, that they had to work together to help ensure that that terrible history did not repeat itself. And that the commitment and the will of every one of them would be needed for that purpose. And that that purpose was theirs. Now this happened in their first gathering, and that enlivened them in a way to do the incredibly difficult work. People talked about it as a moment of communion. They sensed the emerging future that was dependent upon them, and it's not like it's been easy. But out of this group have emerged political leaders, have emerged people who have worked together to make a difference, and someone says that they, you know, again, reflecting that Guatemala is not a perfect place, but they believe that without the work of this group, that there would have been a coup d'etat. You know, they feel like certainly. So these are places that we can go if we are willing to practice group discernment at the bottom of that U, and we'll have our own discernment. The Social Justice and Action Committee, Deborah, Barbara, and Kathy, the three tall women who lead that group, are wanting to engage us to discover, out of all the ways this fellowship could contribute to creating a world of peace, equity, and justice, where are we called to focus? How might we make a unique contribution? What future needs us to enable it to unfold? So next Sunday after the service, we'll be gathering kind of here at the top of the U to do some of that discovering what we already know and being open for surprises, learning together about the passions of the people in the congregation and about what other organizations are already doing, what our denomination is already doing. And then we'll gather again to enter more of that space, that conversation, to go deeper in the U. We'll hear different points of view. We'll have some silence to reflect on what we're learning. Speak when we're moved to speak, not with the intention of forcing our viewpoint, but to share what's coming up for us intuitively, to discover what we will learn together. If we're all intent on learning from each other, the direction before us will begin to form spontaneously. Our way begins to open, and all that is not our way will begin to close. So my hope is that we will learn together about discernment and reach a higher understanding of who we are and what in us is true. We can be one in searching for the meaning that binds our hearts and points us on our way. May it be so, and I invite us to join together in singing hymn number 318, We Would Be One.